Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 19th of August. This hour of the program, should we pay public school teachers for merit? And if so, what would that be? Should we take into account student test scores or graduation rates or other measures, and what might they be of student achievement? Jim Carlson is our guest this hour of the program. Jim is the UNISERV director for the Kettle Moraine UNISERV Council, an affiliate of the Wisconsin Education Association Council and the National Education Association. Jim is also the founder and president of the Educator Compensation Institute, which is a nonprofit information clearinghouse and research organization that works on education employee compensation. He's bargained several locally implemented alternative compensation systems for teachers and has crafted and negotiated a Wisconsin legislative alternative to merit pay. He's traveled to many states to talk about teacher compensation, and we're happy to have him with us this hour as Wisconsin starts looking very seriously. There have been several bills introduced that will look at tying pay to an increase in student performance and other issues on the table as well. So here's our number to join us, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. And Jim Carlson, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Kathleen.
Yeah. I guess you should start by telling us about the new pay system that you work to institute in Manitowoc. What's different in Manitowoc?
Several things make Manitowoc different. Our traditional pay scales pay teachers for years of experience in college credits. In Manitowoc, in 1999, when it was first implemented, it recognized that teacher professional development, the scope of teacher professional development, was far greater than just college credits. So we embraced national board certification. We created our own academy, the Manitowoc School District Academy, where teachers taught teachers, and those sorts of things were rewarded as well. We also acknowledged the professional development certificate out of the University of Green Bay, the Institute for Learning partnership up there. So we expanded the scope of what we recognize to be valuable professional development.
Mm-hmm. And did you look at all at student test scores, at graduation rates, the things that are being floated about now?
No, we didn't. In fact, we purposely did not do that. There's no doubt that teacher performance there's a direct correlation between the performance and the effectiveness of a teacher and the growth of a student. But to reward the outcomes ignores the factors that cause teachers to be effective. And so we focused on those factors, not on student test scores.
Mm-hmm. Tell me more about the National Board Certification. I know teachers who have that or who are working to get that. Why do you think that's important, and what exactly is it, Jim?
Well, it's classroom-based, it's individual-based upon each respective practitioner. There's some significant research out there that indicates that students in classes with teachers with National Board Certification tend to do better than students in classes without that. What we don't know, of course, is whether the National Board Certification caused that to happen, or these just happen to be highly effective teachers, and that's why they pursued the National Board. We did want to, in Manitowoc and in the Accomplished Teaching Pathways, the APATH plan that's been developed now, did recognize that because we viewed it as a valuable alternative to, you know, traditional college credits.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of a hard thing to quantify as you're looking at. Well, let me ask you another question before I get to that.
Sure.
Do you think that if teachers are superb teachers and they have a National Board certification, they have a spark in the classroom, and people know what that is, that there should be a pay system based on there should be a different kind of pay system, that it's okay to pay one teacher $50,000 a year and one teacher $45,000 a year, quite a change from a single kind of system that we've had for years.
is the question, should we pay some teachers more than others? And currently we do that. We currently pay, you know, beginning teachers far less than we pay veteran teachers. We pay teachers with a bachelor's degree far less than we pay teachers with a master's degree. So we embrace that notion. But if the question is, should we pay teachers more based on standardized test scores, I would assert misses the point. In any profession, teaching included, the performance of the practitioners, tend to fall along a bell curve, if you will. There's a scattering of a handful of teachers who will be underperforming. There'll be a handful of teachers who are extremely high performing, and everybody clustered in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the merit pay plans that are being tried out around the country will provide rewards to those high-performing teachers. And setting aside the debate about how to identify who those high-performing teachers are, but if you set that debate aside for a second, giving those bonuses to those high-performing teachers will not have any sort of systemic impact on the system. What Manitowoc attempted to do and what APATH attempts to do is to deal with not only take advantage of the extraordinarily high-performing teachers in leadership roles, but to build a system that improves the performance of the vast majority of teachers who are already hardworking and largely effective. So to apply bonuses will not have a wider systemic impact on the organization, but an APATH-like or Manitowoc-like system will.
Mm-hmm. What about, do schools then function differently from other parts of society? Because in some places, and I know it's hard to judge with schools, but we know who the really creative teachers are, the teachers that everybody wants to sign up for their courses. They talk about them in the lunchroom. They laugh at their jokes, etc. They seem to be inspired by a method of teaching. And maybe this isn't true outside the world of teaching, but those people usually would be, or maybe they wouldn't be, you might disagree, rewarded in some ways, be it monetarily, or people want to make sure that they are retained, and usually that's because of money. Is there a difference, and if so, should there be such a difference between the public world and the private world?
Well, there's a number of questions there, Kathleen. One is, should we reward these extraordinary teachers, mm-hmm, that you mentioned, and I would answer that yes, in the following way. Economic rewards for those teachers can be tied to leadership roles, so that those teachers, those ones that that everybody talks about that you mentioned, can have an impact on their colleagues and in the instruction of their colleagues. So to take advantage, the economic rewards would be tied to their leadership within the system, or within the organization. And in fact, Wisconsin licensure attempts to try to grasp this notion with its master educator provisions. So to somehow capture the skills and allow those teachers to share those that skill set with their colleagues, it would have a greater impact on the organization than simply paying them more for just being better.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Well, I think the teachers are quite underpaid as it is. I think teaching is such a, everybody blasts teachers, and they're not as much as they used to, or maybe they are, but it's such an incredibly important task in this society. And as a result of the importance, we should be paying them a whole lot more to begin with, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. It's not funny, but it's true that one of the teachers in my area just retired after 40 years in the classroom. And when she told me what she was paid in 40 years ago, it was somewhere around $6,500.
Hmm.
If you adjust that for the cost of living, a starting teacher, this happens to be Manitowoc, a starting teacher in Manitowoc today makes less than that starting teacher did 40 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
And when you take into consideration the changes that have occurred in public education from 40 years ago, it's quite disconcerting. I mean, changes in special education, the student population, all the factors that have made education far more challenging. It's outrageous, I think, that the teacher today makes less than she did 40 years ago. There's a guy in New York, a young Yale graduate who's about to launch a charter school, in fact, this year. And his philosophy is that if you want talent in the classroom, then you paid talent in the classroom. So right. He's removing the sort of the extras, but he's paying all of his teachers $125,000 a year.
Really?
And the principal, which he will be, $90,000 a year. And I chatted briefly with him, and his philosophy is that it's not magic here. It's just what we want is talent, and money will attract talent. So it'll be fun to watch how that charter school, how that does and what kind of results they get, because I know that they've, as you can well imagine, the number of applicants for
yes.
a handful of positions is
yes.
extraordinary.
I'm sure it is. That's going to be filled right off the bat, yeah. We're going to take phone calls for Jim, and we'll do that in just a moment. I want to talk a moment about, because I don't understand what all of this is. I know that Wisconsin has gotten rid of the QE, what is it, the QE?
QEO.
Thank you, the QEO, I always wanted to think of, and made themselves now open to removing laws that would keep them from getting some of these race to the top funds. Can you explain those monies, what they're designated for? If Wisconsin needs to get those, what we would have to do to qualify for some of that money?
Yeah, I think there's a certain amount of part of these things are not real clear, but to qualify for the race to the top, I know that there seems to be an indication that you can't have provisions that prohibit a connection between teacher evaluation and student growth. And we currently have statutory provisions that prohibit that, specifically student test scores. But the race to the top, as I understand it, doesn't require a correlation between teacher evaluation and standardized test scores. It requires a correlation between teacher evaluation and student growth. And I'm comfortable with that change, and I welcome the opportunity and applaud the president for his interest in innovation in education. I am concerned that this will be interpreted as a mandate for merit pay, which, as I mentioned earlier, I think misses the mark. But I'm hopeful that Wisconsin can grapple with this statutory provision in such a way that we can qualify for these race to the top funds and implement pilot programs like Accomplished Teaching Pathways. The nation has scores of merit pay plans already in place without any validating data. And what we need is an experiment, several experiments around the country, and Wisconsin is poised to be a perfect place to be, to host those experiments. But I believe that APATH and Manitowoc-like plans can have the kinds of outcomes that the president seeks. The merit pay plans, like Special Teachers Are Rewarded in Florida, or STAR as it was called, lasted a year, and they attempted to identify the 25% of the highest performing teachers and give them a bonus. That program lasted only a year.
Oh my!
So we do need experiments in this country on teacher pay, but it can't be. I believe it can't only be merit pay. We have plenty of those to look at. There's other alternatives out there, an expansion of Manitowoc that I firmly assert will have the kinds of results we want, or demonstrate the kinds of results we want.
Let's go to phone calls for you. We'll start with Catherine from Reedsburg today. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, good. In certain parts of my house, it varies. The gentleman, I'm sorry, I didn't catch his name, he said something that's really important and that I agree with. He said that it showed that the teachers that had national certification, I believe is the term for it, showed that they had better results. But he wondered if it's because if they were good teachers because they aspired to improve their skills, and one of the ways they thought they might is by becoming nationally certified, or if there was something that was actually taught in the certification that made them better teachers. And I think that's a really important point. And you're so right. It's very difficult to quantify how to determine how we're going to pay our teachers better. I definitely think that when teachers are able to do a really good job and produce something, and you see, so this day is still arbitrary because no one can agree whether it should be standardized tests or skills-based tests or criterion-based tests or a national-based test. But I know for a fact, and I'm just bringing this up, but there are many reasons I could support it. I lived in Georgia for a while, and I have studied education for the past 8 years, and we have many teachers in our family as well. And I did a lot of contrasting, comparing type studies. And one of the things that I found, you know, and this is a simple fact, though, for everyone to know, Georgia teachers, when you adjust for the cost of living allowance, they're some of the top paid teachers for the cost when you adjust for the cost of living allowance. And yet, Georgia's the 49th or 48th state in achievement. And so I have to wonder what is really going on. And in my studies, in contrasting and comparing, and this is such a wide thing, so I'm trying to, you know, make it as short as possible. It really needs to start, and this is just one, you know, idea, okay, I'm sure there's many, at the university level and with the chiefs of schools. Because what I saw with some of the teachers that were coming to high schools and that type of thing is that they were learning information that was not working anymore. For example, there was one special ed teacher that thought you could treat dyslexia with medication, and she's currently paid really well. There's another teacher that was paid, and she was a leader. And, you know, the gentleman mentioned a leader. Somehow, unfortunately, she became a leader, I think because she got her Ph.D. or was studying her Ph.D. And I think what happened, and this is what I've seen often, is that because you get a higher degree, you automatically get more pay. Well, it really depends on the quality of education coming from that university. And this one other person I was speaking about, she didn't understand, for example, that you test reading fluency not just by reading a list of words. Mm-hmm. That's not the test for reading fluency. So, and she was considered one of the experts in a really large school system. But anyway, so I guess, I do agree that it's very difficult to measure how we're going to determine what quality is. I do think that there has to be a natural curiosity in a teacher. I'm concerned that once we start putting up criteria, like saying, you know, you get to be a leader, or you get paid more if you get a higher degree, you have to be really careful, because then there are going to be those people, and this one person happened to be one of them, who's going to aspire to that based on only those criteria.
All right, let me hold you there. We have a lot of people trying to get through to Jim. She's brought up a lot of areas. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's difficult to respond to the sort of anecdotal stuff, but I can say respond in a couple of ways. First of all, the accomplished teaching pathways, this notion of teachers coming into the profession is critical. Attracting of all the parts of a compensation system or the components that we talk about, the most critical, in my view, is the attraction of talent into the classroom. What we currently do, however, is tremendously flawed. What we currently do is, in large part, bring brand new teachers into the business and typically put them in very difficult jobs. And that's pretty obvious why I think, there's a lot of turnover in challenging positions, whether it's a hard-to-serve school or a difficult population. Those teachers tend to turn over quite readily. So we bring brand new teachers into the profession, and we plop them into really tough positions, and wonder why 50% of the nation's teachers leave the profession after 5 years, or within the first 5 years. What I would advocate is that first-year teachers come into the business, first of all, would not be assigned to those difficult-to-serve positions, and in fact would serve like a medical plan in terms of a residency, or a medical model in terms of a residency. They'd spend their first year teaching only half time and the other half time modeling, reflecting, observing veteran, highly effective teachers before moving into a full-time teaching position. In terms of these advanced degrees that the woman was referring to, we do have a culture in this country of acknowledging that, and we're going to have to work through a transition from that model. But the research tends to indicate that advanced degrees in content area and cognitive sciences do have a direct impact on teacher performance. So I would advocate a transition from the current model to the model that recognizes the value of those two kinds of master's degrees.
Mm-hmm. Jim Carlson is our guest this hour. How should we be paying our teachers is the question of the hour. Legislation has been introduced to link the pay of a teacher to student performance, but you run into the difficult question of how do you assess student performance. Jim is the founder and president of the Educator Compensation Institute, a nonprofit clearinghouse and research organization working on education employee compensation, developed due to a recognition of the paucity of research and limited opportunities for exchanging ideas about alternative compensation for education employees, particularly teacher compensation. More phone calls in a moment. Our lines are jammed. Our number is 800. Well, there's one opening now, 800-486-8655. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls. Greg is next from Madison. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Kathleen, and good morning, Jim. Jim, my question for you is, what is, and I have a follow-up, Kathleen, if I can be allowed. My question for you is, what is the institutional resistance you're finding within WEAC itself and the teachers union nationally? Are you meeting any? Are there old mindsets you're trying to break? If you could talk about that a little bit.
Certainly. I don't know if you're familiar with Accomplished Teaching Pathways or APATH, but it's the newest sort of approach to teacher compensation that I'm currently advocating. I would say this, that 10 years ago or 12 years ago when we first started exploring these notions in Manitowoc, the resistance would have been significant from the institutional components of WEAC and the NEA. As we sit today, however, I've experienced no institutional resistance. In fact, quite the opposite. That whatever evolution has occurred over the last decade institutionally, there's an embrace of a notion like APATH, both nationally and within the state. And I understand how organizations work and how they sometimes slowly evolve, but to answer your question, in fact, the opposite has been true, that there's been an embrace of this notion. And in fact, input from advocates within WEAC and NEA contributed to the product of APATH.
You had something else, Greg?
Can I go with my follow-up? Kathy?
Sure, go ahead.
Jim, did you go to UW-Milwaukee and graduate from the IR program?
Yes, I did. You're talking about the Masters for Industrial and Labor Relations.
Yes. It's Greg Leifer, Jim. I taught you collective bargaining.
Oh, my goodness. It's been 1997.
Yep.
It's a pleasure to hear your voice.
About this approach back then, we had long discussions about it, and we talked about the resistance that would be met because of the mindsets that have been set over the years. And, Jim, I'm just glad to hear that you are making progress.
Well, thanks. It's great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, Jim.
Never know who you'll reunite with on the radio, right?
It's
great.
It's quite amazing.
That's great. Thanks, Greg, very much for the call. Katie is next from Oshkosh. Hi, Katie.
It's Kathy.
Oh, Kathy. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for this opportunity. Taking a larger view, we are a culture suffering from self-indulgence, and it's no surprise many students do not recognize the value of their own education. Their responsibility doesn't ever seem to be a part of any discussion on education. And my second point is interested teachers should be able to participate in the hiring practice, and administrators should be exercising their responsibility in ridding the system of poor teachers. Thank you.
Jim.
Yeah, there's nothing that she said that I would disagree with. there's only so much that education, the public education system can control. They can only control those factors within the schoolhouse walls. I mean, we can't control what happens at home or what kind of economic factors impact a child or what their diets are before they get to school. So I wouldn't suggest that anybody's ignoring the factors that the caller talked about, but you know what we're talking about here is teacher compensation, not the broader social climate that impacts student learning, and everyone I think recognizes that. In terms of administrator responsibilities, I wholeheartedly agree. I think their primary function ought to be dealing with struggling teachers and simply facilitating successful ones. But their plates, too, are full. And that's a sort of a culture in our systems that I would argue is flawed, that a manager of a school building, we call a principal, their primary responsibility should be exactly what the caller suggested.
And thanks for your call, Kathy. We go to Aaron next from Milwaukee. Hi, Aaron.
Hi. I have just a couple of comments. First of all, I completely agree. I'm a teacher myself. I completely agree with the last caller. Students and parents don't seem to be getting, having to deal with the responsibilities that are put on teachers. With that said, I do have Obama's education book and his kind of plan for education, and I was wondering if I'd be able to just read a couple of lines from it.
Sure.
Okay. He says about performance pay, he's interested in it, but he recognizes that in the 80s there was, conflict and it didn't work out. But he says, as yet, there are no rigorous empirical validations to show that U.S. performance pay programs in education are linked to substantial and sustained successes, either in evaluating student achievement or in accelerating the occupational attractiveness of education for a wider pool of able teacher candidates. So that was really interesting. I think that, like your guest is talking about, we do need to experiment a little bit. Anna Quinlan wrote an article in Newsweek, I don't know what year, I don't have it in front of me, I think 2005 or 2007, talking about how corporations who want to get, valuable citizen or valuable employees need to be investing a little bit, and maybe some of the loopholes for corporations to get out of paying their taxes, some of that money could be used for education, so we as a nation would have better public education. And she would be an interesting guest to have on.
Yes, she would. We had her on some of her novels, but we haven't talked to her in a long time.
She is very passionate about education, and this article blew me away, and I've been trying to, give it to other teachers so that they could talk about it, but she would be a really interesting guest.
She sure would. Jim, you want to respond to the call?
Well, in terms of President Obama's initiatives, my sense is, and I don't know, but my sense is that he's motivated by the right things, but there's not been any definition given to that initiative, and that's what these conversations are all about, I believe, is to give definition to that. The caller makes some great points, but defining these issues is quite difficult, and we aren't in a position to address or fix, if you will, the cultural problems that face our classrooms. What we can control in narrow scope of our conversation here is the impact teacher compensation systems have on the outcome in classrooms. So my hope is that conversations like this and initiatives like APATH give definition to the president's Race to the Top funds. I will say that she had alluded to some compensation systems around the country. There's the most notable of the ones in America right now is Denver's plan that's received the most national attention. And there are, I would argue, flaws in the Denver plan, but they did several things right. One, they involved teacher practitioners in the development of their new compensation system, which I believe, I would argue, is critical. Second, before broader implementation, they piloted the program to see if it would generate the desired results. And finally, they secured sustainable funding before broader implementation. That model is the exact model that we should follow when we explore different sorts of compensation systems, because these systems will cost more money. But I argue that the results will validate the larger expenditure.
And what did Arne Duncan do in Chicago?
Besides play basketball with the president, he was, of course, the superintendent there. And he talks about some initiatives he did with merit pay. And I've not had any discussions with Mr. Duncan about that. Again, I'll say that we need to give proper definition to teacher compensation, and I'm not convinced, and I could be wrong because I'm not completely familiar with it, but I'm not certain that Mr. Duncan has explored all the available definitions for this issue.
Thank you, Aaron, for your call. Frank from Sheboygan is next. Hi, Frank.
Hello.
Hi.
I would like to make two points. I hope I have time to make them. The first refers to the Harlem's Children's Zone. Teachers with a class full of children from the Children's Zone will get, I believe, better results than the teacher whose class is composed of a widely varied group of children. And when we impose a sort of business model on education, let's remember that manufacturers have specifications that they require of their suppliers. And so when we're going to compensate teachers, are we going to be able to account for the differences in the composition of the class? And the second point is that if we're going to be somewhat scientific about this, it seems to me that an interesting approach might be to take somebody who has been acknowledged as a teacher of the year and ask them to transplant themselves to a disadvantaged school and in complete anonymity, because we don't want to have people aware that they're a teacher of the year and get that Westinghouse effect in research, that they see how effective they are in a different socioeconomic setting.
I don't understand your point about if we have the same cultural background in schools, the students are likely to do better. I don't get what you're saying there.
Well, the previous caller in the previous hour talked about the Harlem's Children's Zone where children are reading above grade level.
Right.
And if you have a classroom filled with those kind of children, you could expect to do better than if you have a classroom in which you have children without that kind of preparation.
Right.
And so how can we say that the teacher with the Children's Zone students should automatically get more compensation when they have an advantage because the children have met certain advanced specifications?
Right. I see your point. Jim.
Well, I certainly haven't been advocating more compensation based on test scores, and there's a clear recognition that a population of students will impact the larger outcome of that group of students. I think that's generally acknowledged. The notion that we transplant teachers of the year, as the caller described them, to difficult positions, I think is close to what I would suggest, but not exactly the same. I suggest that we use economic incentives to encourage highly qualified teachers to work in challenging positions, but not to forcibly transplant them, as the caller suggested.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Frank, for the call. We go next to Jessica from Madison. Hi, Jessica.
Hi there.
Hi.
I guess I am unclear as to whether you are for bonuses or not. And my question is how does the current economic state, as far as state or federal expenditures go, restrict compensation? Because I feel that they're not even getting the money that they are needing just to even survive. And also, I do not agree with the standardized testing industry, but I guess I could suggest, why not implement some sort of a really easy survey type system like they do in colleges to figure out how they're really doing, going straight to the source of the students.
It's all yours, Jim.
Let me try. The first question was, am I for bonuses or opposed to bonuses? Generally speaking, I would say I'm opposed to bonuses. I believe that a compensation system should serve four purposes. One, to attract high-quality teachers into the profession. Two is to retain that talent once it arrives, and the data is pretty frightening in that. As I mentioned earlier, that the national data is that 50% of teachers leave the profession within the first 5 years at a cost of billions of dollars to the industry. Number three, the system should be designed to improve the delivery of instruction, the skills and knowledge of the practitioners. And number four is to expand what we know about effective teaching practices, largely through action research. Now, if there were bonuses, I would be more encouraged by bonuses for conducting action research, for example, than I would advocate bonuses for standardized test scores.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not certain. I don't recall what her other point was.
What was the other point, Jessica?
Oh, it was about the how, you know, there are so many limits to what the school system get as far as their budget goes. Therefore, if we base a pay system on merit and it's divided on how much education you've had, what's to say the school system is not going to want the cheaper teacher just to fit in their budget? There's just so much going on with deficits and
sure.
Whatnot.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. And even though this is an extremely valuable conversation that is taking place nationally right now, in fact, the national debate, it's taking place at a very difficult time. In the 90s, when we had an economic boom in this nation, we still weren't seeing the sorts of dollars come into education that would compensate our teachers to the extent that we would attract large pools of people into the industry. So that tells me that we're doing something that's not attracting the money. So to do what we've been doing for 30 years needs to be examined, because there may be an alternative that would encourage more money to come into the industry. It may not happen now because of the economic woes we're all facing, but this is a perfect time to examine alternatives to the traditional pay scale. And if we can examine or demonstrate the results through these experiments, we can demand and expect that the money will come, the money will follow.
We have a couple teachers writing into us who really exemplify how difficult it would be to do merit pay here based on what is the question. We have a question: how might merit pay be decided for technical arts, band music, foreign language, or special education teachers? This is a retired teacher from Tomahawk. And another question: I'm an English language learner. Many of my students are refugees who are in a low socioeconomic class, lack in consistent academic background, and often are in need of various social services. How would my performance be judged, considering the diversity of our students across our nation and state?
Well, those are among the many reasons why merit pay is a flawed approach. The folks that emailed in make all very valid points. That's why I don't advocate for merit pay in a traditional sense. And again, as was said earlier, There's scores of those things around the country. Let's examine those before we you know, proliferate the notion around the rest of the country. Let's examine other alternatives. And I assert that we will find the desired results that MeritPay hasn't been able to demonstrate. The notion of the fine arts is one, as a parent, dear to my heart. The more we reward standardized test scores results, the greater and the more myopic, the narrower the scope of education, and the more myopic we become. And we know, and business has taught us this through the Partnership for 21st Century Skills, that the skills that our kids need in the 21st century far transcend those things that we measure. Creativity and problem solving and technology, things that aren't measured in traditional merit pay systems, are forgotten. And the greater the bonus tied to a standardized test score, the more inclination there is to focus on the standardized test scores and ignore those things that make children and ultimately adults very successful.
Thanks for the call. We are going to take more phone calls in a moment. Jim Carlson is our guest this hour. He is the founder and president of the Educator Compensation Institute, and we're talking about how we pay teachers, how we may reward teachers, looking at the issue of tying teacher compensation to an increase in test scores among students, or how would we go about doing such a thing. And we're asking for you to join our conversation. A couple lines are open. 800-486-8655 is the number. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go back to phone calls now. Dan from Minocqua is next. Hi, Dan.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, I have a couple of questions for you. Let me give you the first. The first is, I read a while back about a program of teacher evaluation. I believe it was in Toledo, Ohio. That instead of relying upon student achievement to drive teacher compensation, they had a panel created of teachers that evaluated their peers. You were evaluated by teachers outside of your own district, outside of your own building, so that you were unfamiliar with the teacher with whom you were evaluating. Have you heard about that?
No, I'm not familiar with it. I'm familiar, not that specific one in Toledo. I am familiar with organizations, school organizations that attempt to follow more of the legal model, the passing the bars kind of things, taking a different look at how we not only certify but evaluate teachers. So I'm not familiar with the Toledo one, but I'm familiar with the concept.
How would you feel about something like that used to drive teacher compensation?
Used to drive teacher compensation? No, I think, again, as we've talked about over the last 40 minutes or so, that misses the mark in terms of the systemic impact on the culture of the building. But I would not advocate that link between that evaluation and teacher compensation.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you for your call. Let us go next to Jason from Boscobel. Hi, Jason.
Oh, thank you very much. It was brought up in the email a few minutes ago, but I am a music teacher in a public school, and I've always, while listening to these discussions, wondered how teachers of the arts would ever be able to fit into this, you know, and not to be off subject, but with No Child Left Behind, the specials and FIED were always being kind of left out of things the way it is, and I just don't know how we would fit into any program.
I think I mentioned a few minutes ago that's a profound problem within the system. My oldest is about to go to lacrosse and majoring in acting. So I get the importance of arts in our school systems, and because we don't have standardized test scores for them, is one of the many reasons why a merit pay plan tied to those scores is a flawed approach.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Rich is next from Portage. Hi, Rich.
Well, good morning.
Hi.
My comment again goes along with the electives in schools is, if we're not going to use standardized testing and we're going to allow the only other people that would be able to do it would be like an administration, and I think schools are so political that how could they fairly decide the teachers when you might go 4 or 5 months without speaking to your principal? And right now I see a lot of resources allocated in schools just by the politics of the school system. Hiring and firing is based on, you know, who the principal determines to be important aspects of the school. So I would like you to elaborate on how we're going to do merit pay if it's not going to be by standardized testing.
Well, we're not going to do merit pay, I think, is the short answer to that. I'm not certain I understand all of the question, but I haven't advocated teacher pay tied to standardized test scores. I do think standardized test scores can be of value to organizations. There is no doubt about that. I'm not advocating that teacher pay is tied to principal evaluations for the very reason that the caller identified, that these are very political organizations. The role and the training and the preparation of a building principal, however, is critical to the success of an organization. And I do believe their role is critical, as I mentioned, but not in terms of identifying what someone gets paid and what they don't.
Thank you so much for your call. Frank from Menominee, hi.
Hello. I think this is a great program you got going on, and I think the speaker is doing a very commendable job of advocating for a different system of paying teachers. I was a public school teacher for 12 years myself, and I was an employee of the Wisconsin Education Association Council for 28 years, and I've been retired now for 11. And my point of view is that in this argument, the management of schools, administrators, principals, and superintendents never seem to get the amount of attention required to this business of not only teacher pay, but how schools are doing. It was my experience at any school I worked for, and my experience as a WEAC staffer, is where you had a good organizer, a good building principal who could work as a team with the staff, you had good quality education. And I think this whole idea of bonuses and merit pay as a example, look what it did in the finance industry. I don't think it would work at all, and I think that administrators should get a greater share of the responsibility for the defects that we experience in public schools.
Jim.
Yeah, I there's nothing in that was said that I would disagree with. I would reiterate the point that I made a moment ago about the importance of a building-level administrators. I recognize that it's a tremendously difficult task. Managing people, especially highly educated professional people, is a difficult task. But we probably, on a larger scale, can do a better job of that management. Where we lay the fault, I don't know, but I certainly recognize the importance of their role in a successful and functional school system.
Thanks very much for the call. We have about a minute left. This is a subject of another show, but before all of this, we have potential teachers, and I've done many shows in the past about not being able to recruit people who are high caliber, gung-ho, potentially fabulous teachers. They go elsewhere because of money issues. What's going on with that? Are we attracting more people to the teaching profession now, Jim?
Well, we're attracting some people to the profession, but we're not keeping them.
I see.
And in large part, that's for the reasons you've already identified, that money, you know, people don't go into teaching to get rich. I understand that, but they also don't go into teaching to get poor. And our starting salaries in education are abysmal. In Wisconsin, you know, it's typically in somewhere between the high 20s to the mid-30s to attract a teacher. That's after 5 years of education, typically. They can go into almost any other field with that amount of education and be compensated significantly greater. The Accomplished Teaching Pathways plan that I alluded to earlier says that a minimum for a teacher after residency would be $50,000, and I'm not even convinced that that's adequate. The economic burden on the state, of course, is important, and it's an issue here. But we must recognize the value of teaching to the extent that we generate the amount of payment that will encourage people to come into the profession.
And that's so important. That. We have to go, Jim,
sure.
But I thank you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Jim Carlson, our guest, founder and president of the Educator Compensation Institute and Uniserve director for the Kettle Moraine Uniserve Council. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to Jolema Noel for on-air production in Milwaukee, and thanks everybody for all of your calls. We'll be with you tomorrow. Many more hours of great conversation ahead here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.